The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Well, hello there. This is Fred Brack from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. And for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting our program for over 10 years. Thank you, Carter Glass. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. And now, we open the cover of a brand new issue of Our State magazine celebrating North Carolina, this one for February 2020. The theme this month is Restoration Restaurants, from food halls to filler-ups. And there's a picture of the Star Diner here on the front cover with an old Gulf service station sign lit up, and an old car, which looks like a Chevy with a big, looks something like a 57 Chevy. I don't think it is, but it's a taxi out in front of the Star. And we're going to talk about the Great Blizzard of 1960. But first, we are going to start, as we always do on the first reading each month, with the what's now called the From Elizabeth column by Elizabeth Hudson, editor-in-chief. She calls this one heart, comma, shaped. If I'm treating myself, I'm going for the classic chocolate caramel bonbons from French Broad Chocolate Lounge, packaged in a little blue box. North Carolina's version of Tiffany Blue. Or maybe I'm going for the triple chocolate truffle from Chocolate Fetish in Asheville, with its three layers of opulence. If I'm in Raleigh, it's definitely the gold-tinged honey caramel bonbons from the chocolate counter at the Dairy Chocolate Factory or the Dark Chocolate Sea Salt Bar from Escazoo. My first experience with that last one came in Beaufort more than a decade ago, when one of North Carolina's first chocolate pioneers, Hallett Parson, had just started producing small batch candy from his little apartment above Crew Wine Bar. But on one day each year, February 14th, Valentine's Day, I look forward to something else. My heart-shaped, wrapped-in-red cellophane box of assorted chocolates from, yes, Russell Stover! A tradition started by my dad when I was 6 years old, and now taken over by my mother, as neither of us can imagine a Valentine's Day without it. In the 1950s, after my dad left school at UNC, he lived for a while in Kansas City, Missouri, and along with an affinity for and insistence on pronouncing the state name Missouri, he came back home with a love for the local chocolate sold at the Russell Stover candy store. He thought that it was quite simply the best. And in those years, way before independent handcraft artisanal chocolate began springing up all over North Carolina, before Dillsboro Chocolate Factory started making their pecan and caramel turtles, before Black Mountain Chocolate produced their cocoa nibs and peppermint bark, before Bar Cocoa in Charlotte ever dreamed of artistically swirled ganache-filled candy, I thought so too. My dad, despite being tall and thin, had an undeniable sweet tooth, but only for chocolate. He kept a bowl of Hershey's Kisses within reach on the coffee table in the den, unwrapping and popping them in his mouth during ACC basketball games on TV. He stashed Tootsie Rolls in the glove compartment of his truck and picked up boxes of Brack's Chocolate Cherry Cordials at Christmas to fill my mum's and my stockings. He loved milk chocolate, Mallow cups, and Kit Kats, miniature special darks and crackles, milk duds and Snickers and Raisinets and cream drops. And the candy drawer in our kitchen stayed full year-round. That Russell Stover box, though, was a rarity, something that appeared only once during the entire year, and although I was a child, I somehow understood its impermanence. Only a dozen pieces of candy came in the box, and I was careful to dole out just a piece or two each day to make them last as long as possible. I ate the cream-filled ones first, and then the caramels, and finally the single chocolate coconut cluster, the one my dad called Tingling, because that's what the Russell Stover store called it. There was only ever one of those chocolate clusters in the box, and maybe that's why it was the best. And every time when I ate that one, I'd hold it up to my dad to show him, an unspoken, "That's it, until next year, between us." He'd sling his arm around my shoulder and give me a squeeze. "Good, isn't it?" he'd say. And I'd nod, grateful for a box filled with chocolate and happy for a heart filled with love. And now, as I do on the first reading of every month, it would be my pleasure to interpret the Bodo essay in the center of our state for February 2020. Painted Carolina. When artists put brush to canvas, they capture a mood, a memory, an emotion that resonates deep within them. We've compiled a gallery of our favorite paintings inspired by the mountains, the coast, and the special places in between, showing them not only as they look, but also as they feel, written by Katie St. Singh. On the opening double page, the caption says, "Douglas Hoover's oil painting, Mail Call, shows the historic home of mailman Henry Pickett, one of the last residents of the now uninhabited Portsmouth Island." And this painting shows I don't know exactly what to call it, kind of like a river inlet from the open water, and it swirls around here in almost a U-shape, and there's a whole center area of green grass, and in the center of the green grass, some silver-colored grass. And on the other side of this little inlet, we see two things. One is a house with a little barn of some kind beside it, just two windows and a door, and a big porch, probably on both the front and the back of the house. There's nothing on the side. And we see Henry's boat docked at a post. And I suppose between the boat and the post, there's a little dock, but we can't see that. Now, the river is bright blue. It's not what you'd expect of an ocean color, a natural ocean color, which would be a greener color. But this is a two-tone blue color, sky blue, really. What it's really doing, of course, is reflecting the color of the sky and some really wispy clouds in the background. It's not fine art, not finely tuned, not exact, not photogenic, but sort of a classic oil painting. Overleaf, away from it all in Ocracoke, Douglas Hoover the Second. Or it's Douglas Hoover //. I'm not really sure which it is. I guess the // is separating his name from the article. In the early 90s, when Hoover first visited Ocracoke, most of the rental cottages didn't have phones. If he needed to contact the outside world, well, there was a payphone at the ferry dock. It was this magical experience, he says. I've been hooked ever since. He's visited the island every year and nearly every season, filling his camera and sketchbook with scenes to take home to his studio in Archdale. Long walks around the village help him capture the easygoing rhythms of island life. From morning meeting, shown here on the top left, featuring a group of old-timers catching up on the porch of the community store, to luminous, shown in the bottom right, a view of the Ocracoke Lake slowing softly at dusk. So up at the top, what we see is the community store, so says the sign on the metal roof. And there's four gentlemen there, all lined up in a row on some kind of a sofa or a swing bench or something like that. They're chatting. There's a white railed stairway, which you can approach from the left or the right on the sidewalk, a blue bicycle up against the front, and a red pickup truck, which says clams and shrimp on the side, and they're just written by hand. They're not fancy. And on top of the truck, in the back of it, is a great big white cooler. It looks like it says Pony Island Rest, Fat Boys Fish Company, clams and shrimp. It actually says shrimp. There's no P on the bottom there. Then it says fresh along the edge. To the right, there's a painting taken from the rear of a couple, a man and a woman, sitting under a colorful beach umbrella on the edge of a dune, looking out at the very blue water, very similar to the water on the previous page. There's a theme going here, and they are very tan. And here's the island girl, the stern of an inboard motor boat, and it says Hatteras underneath, a couple of lines attaching it to the shore. This is a pretty realistic looking photo. It's outfitted for fishing. You can tell by the fishing chair, the special type of chair that's facing the rear of the boat, just above the letters Island Girl. And then here's the Ocracoke Lighthouse at dusk. And on the page to the right, it doesn't say what it is exactly, is a picture of a harbor. And it must be a harbor where a big boat comes in, because we have, I can't remember what they're called, when you take a bunch of pilings and you wrap them all together and then you put a line around them. It's the sort of thing you see at a ferry dock. So it's really heavy duty in case the boat bumps into it. But there's a smaller boat here. It's a sailboat, not that big, and it has a little rubber craft beside it with the engine on it tilted up. And what's interesting about this picture is the water has a little bit of ripple to it, and the lines of the sailboat are seen squiggly in the water coming right toward us. Overleaf portrait of a city. Tommy Midget. / The view from this overpass on Western Boulevard is one of the best in Raleigh, Midget says, and he would know. He's lived in the capital city since 1967. As an artist, Midget is fascinated by faces, but the early 2000s saw a lull in the portrait painting business. So he turned his attention to the city where he grew up. Midget painted Raleigh Downtown Realistic in 2005 and updated it about 7 years later, and the skyline continues to evolve. Raleigh won't look the same next month. These buildings are popping up so fast, Midget says. He loves the energy of his hometown, the arts and sports and people watching. Raleigh's a great place, he says. Every time I think I want to leave, I realize it's really the best. He has a website, tommysartworks.com, and indeed, as compared to, I mentioned earlier when I was looking at Douglas Hoover's work, that it wasn't meant to be all that realistic looking. It was very nicely done, but it didn't have that realist touch. Well, Tommy Midget's is much more. It's not like a photograph, but the detail is finer. And we see a bus about to head under the underpass running into Raleigh from the south side, coming up on the BB&T building. And we see other buildings in the city. We see the shimmering wall over there by the amphitheater, etc., and the Marriott Hotel sign, blue skies, and some bushes and greenery in the front. Lavender Hour, Brenda Behr, B-E-H-R. In the fall, when Wayne County cotton farmers stripped the leaves from their plants to prepare for the harvest, the crimson of the defoliated plants and the light blue of the sky reflect onto the white bowls, creating the most beautiful lavender cast, Behr says. And when a breeze picks up in Wilson County, Wallace Simpson's famous whirligigs don't just spin, they hum. These are some of the secrets of Eastern North Carolina that Behr learned when, after 30 years in the advertising world in Minneapolis, she returned to Goldsboro in 2003 to care for her aging mother. Together, they explored the quiet rural landscape. While Behr painted an en plein air, her mother sat in the front seat of the car and reminisced. Website, Brenda Behr, BEHR.com. Here's the whirligigs. Now, this is, again, not a very fine-tooth type of a painting. A little splotchy in places. That's just a style of the artist. It's not. It doesn't indicate any lack of skill or anything. But in the background, you can see that it's kind of out of focus back there, and there's these little splashes of paint. We see a whirligig that has a sign that says North Carolina State Line on it. And the Lavender Hour, we see the flowers that they talked about. The defoliated plants in the light blue of the sky, giving them that violet or lavender cast. Again, this is a little bit more like a style, a French impressionistic style, more than a realist style. Sunrise, Sunset, Jeremy Sams. One winter day in 2011, Sams went out to the creek behind his house in Archdale and began to paint, inspired by a gallery full of en plein air paintings so lifelike that it looked like they were breathing, he says. 6 hours passed, and he was hooked. He'd learned everything he could about painting outdoors. Now he loads his backpack with supplies and hikes until he finds the perfect spot. On location, he says he can see the nuances of his favorite subjects. Mountains and water, sunrises and sunsets. In Grandfather's Sunset, shown above, evening falls on the Watoga River. In Carolina's Sunrise, on the opposite page, day breaks on Carolina Beach. Sams grew up playing outdoors in North Carolina, canoeing and tubing on the Uari River. Years later, that familiar scenery helps him bring his work to life. JeremySams.com. So Grandfather's Sunset is done from the side of a river, which has taken a sharp turn and then takes another one. So it's like a zigzag. We're looking up and then to the right the river flows, and then it goes off again into the distance. And in the distance, the mountains rise up, and there is a sun setting just over the crest of the mountain, and all around the sun behind it are yellowish clouds, and they turn into purple and sort of a lavender color, and then into the blue the higher we get. On the left-hand side, a steep riverbank comes up to an area where we have some pine trees. On the right-hand side, we have some deciduous trees and a whole bunch of rocks as we slope down toward the river. This picture of Carolina Beach is bubbly water along the shore. It's not a realist type painting, so it's a little hard to describe what the foam looks like here, but the sun is setting behind, and we see the reflection of the sun between each one of the waves as we go out toward the horizon, and the sky is golden yellow, and as you go a little higher, it gets a little darker, some dark sections, and then we see some bluish clouds, and then a little bit of white, and then the light blue sky. Overleaf Mountain Elegance, Anne Vasilik. For a well-traveled artist with a weakness for European street scenes, the old-world elegance of Asheville is a dream. Since moving to the Paris of the South in 1988, Vasilik has found inspiration in landmarks like the Biltmore Conservatory and snow falling on the dome of the First Baptist Church. From Moonlight Over Asheville, the top of this page, she hauled her easel down to Pack Square and painted under a street lamp. Down there in that artificial light, the Vance Memorial was wonderfully pink, she says. I feel very fondly about paintings that I do en plein air because they take on greater spontaneity, a greater spirit. AnArt.Vasilik.com. So we see the Biltmore Conservatory. If you've been there, you know it's got a lot of glass. The whole roof is glass sloping up to a peak. And on the double height side, there's windows kind of like you'd find in a church or maybe a railroad station with an arched top made up of lots of little panes of glass. And they're somewhat translucent. And inside, you see the color of the plants behind them. And outside, a lot of colorful plants. Some are in big pots along a stone wall that separates the lawn from the lower paved area where people walk, and then some garden area cut into each one of them. And then the others over here, the Asheville Street at night, and the snowy scene, which is also during the night, because those are either stars or snowflakes, not sure which, but this is the one with the Vance Memorial, wonderfully pink, as she says. Water and Light by Laura Poss, P-O-S-S. Before she discovered watercolors, Poss was drawn to water, lakes, rivers, and the Atlantic during regular family trips to the coast. Later, while living in Oriental, she found a community of watercolorists and thought, I have to try that. She particularly loved the luminosity of watercolors, the way light penetrates pigment and reflects off the white of the paper. She's painted the lighthouses at Hatteras, Oak Island, Cape Lookout, Body Island, and Currituck. Our lighthouses are a beacon of grace in North Carolina identity as much as a beacon for safety, she says. Under her brush, they glow. You can find her work at lauraposs.com. This scene of the Hatteras light is taken from the water. We see in the bottom a little bit of froth where the water has come up on the beach, and then just a little bit of runoff, and the birds are there trying to peck at little clams and those little oyster-like thing, not oyster thing, but you know, they're little, these little shelled animals that wash in and they immediately burrow down, and the birds try to get to them first. So they're running around trying to get their meal. You can see a little bit of the reflection of the lighthouse in that wet area on the sand. Then we have the open sand, we have the dune, we have dune grass, and finally the lighthouse in the rear with its such characteristic wrapping around diagonal stripes against a blue and white sky. And over here, I believe this is the Ocracoke light. Let's see if I'm correct. Clockwise or counterclockwise. It ends up with Currituck light. This is the one that's the reddish brick. And then the other three lighthouses are also pictured here. A Tale of Two Campuses. Ryan Fox, as a professional photographer turned watercolorist, Fox appreciates that a painting, unlike a snapshot, allows him to modify details of a scene to more closely match the image that's in his head. A limited palette, just four colors, helped him change daylight to dusk for Tobacco Campus skyline. While the many intricate details of the American Tobacco Campus show the energy and layered history of downtown Durham. Meanwhile, in Time for Rest, water blossoms stand in for ornamentation on Duke Chapel's facade. Instead of trying to capture every detail of the grand edifice, he says, he just hoped to record the moment in all its tranquil beauty. So over here, this turned into night shot of the Lucky Strike Water Tower and the Lucky Strike Tower of Stone, which was for the smokestack there at the Tobacco Campus right now, with other buildings in the background. It's all a little rough, but very clear as to what it is, and the sky just turns black behind the top of the water tower and the top of the smokestack. And then we have that Duke campus, Duke Chapel's facade here, done, and as he says, he's not trying to capture details. In fact, there's sections of it that almost look like they weren't finished, but the outline is there for everything. Trains and Towers, Alan Butt, B-U-T-T. The timing was perfect. Butt had heard about an unmissable view of the Charlotte skyline. And as he approached the overpass on Matheson Avenue, the sun was just coming up over the horizon. It was early enough that the tracks below were full of trains yet to leave the depot. The sunlight glinted off the skyscrapers beyond. It was just spectacular, Butt says. A scene that plenty of people have seen from a car window, but one they may not have noticed. Butt grew up in Mobile, Alabama, and has lived all over the country, but 7 years ago, he and his wife realized that Charlotte was home. I have never lived in a place that was so international, he says. It's so interesting. There are so many things to do and to observe. I'm always looking out the window to see if anything hits me. I'm always watching the sky and the clouds and the atmosphere to see things that the rest of us miss, he says. That is the role of an artist. They make us stop and see the world. And you can find his world at alanbutt.com. Nice view of all the trains. I love trains. And they're so colorful in this picture. He's got a lot of blue on them. And of course, as an artist, he can make them whatever color he wants, can't he? So I don't know whether it's totally realistic or not, but the skyscrapers behind them are painted in various shades of yellow and brown and gray and a little bit of purple and blue also up against a sort of a bluish-gray sky. Stirring up stories, Sharon Bass. For Bass, the hunt for a plein air scene is an adventure. She loves to hit the road in search of places with the perfect combination of light, color, composition, and what she calls immediacy. I often hear people exclaim, "I feel as if I can walk right into your painting," she says. Near her family's place in Atlantic Beach, she was drawn to the waterfront view at Finn's Grill in Beaufort and the shrimp burgers at Elle's Drive-In in Morehead City. But she doesn't have to venture far from her studio in Raleigh to find the qualities she's looking for. At the Roast Grill, where her husband and son meet for hot dogs most weeks, she set up her easel right across the southwest street and watched people come and go on a bright spring day. That stirred up a story, buyers of Bass's art often tell her. That stirred up a great memory. SharonBass.com. Again, not very realistic, but a little bit on the rough side for the painting of people coming out of Elle's Drive-In and going toward their cars, and couple of pigeons in the parking lot. Here's Finn's. I've eaten there in Beaufort. Gas, diesel, bait, ice, and tackle. And the Roast Grill. Somebody going in the door and other people right behind. Well, my friends, that is about all the time we have for this week's episode of Our State Magazine, and I do hope you enjoyed it, and that you'll join us next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They're located in Falls of Neuse Road and again in Cary. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Comments, questions, call the studios 919-832-5138. So long until next time.